hope, done sensibly, is that the incentives for investment and economic growth will bring in enough growth and therefore tax revenues. But if it's guaranteed to stay level as long as you paid it for the entire 20 or 30 years, so you felt very secure, and you figured, gee, 20, 30 years from now, the mortgage is paid off.
This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, on 720 WGN.
And here we are in the Allstate Skyline studio. Welcome to Wednesday afternoon, the Wintrust Business Lunch here on 720 WGN. And Terry Savage is in the studio. We'll talk to Frank Sennett a little bit later, and then we'll head up to, actually, to Northwestern. They've got a big wildfire demo day coming up tomorrow. This is part of their summer program for young entrepreneurs. And Neil Sales Griffin will be here. He's a mentor at the Garage, but also the CEO of Code Now. But in the studio is Terry Savage, and I'm counting on her to bring a little sunshine here because...
Ooh, it's gloomy out these windows. It's a beautiful view up here, but it's gloomy.
In the past half hour or so, I mean, it has gotten almost eclipse-like dark around here.
The fog comes in on little cat feet.
Are you reciting Kyle Sandberg for us?
Yes, I am.
I'm impressed.
And sits on silent haunches waiting.
Here we are in the city of big shoulders and sitting the U.S. economy doing very well. The numbers keep coming in. And, wow, I'm looking for some bad news. I don't see anything.
There's a little bit around the edges. But I think this is an important conversation to have right now because the economy is inevitably intertwined with the elections coming up now in just 2 months, really. And... for all of those people who would like to see the opposition gain some power, it's going to make it that much more difficult because the truth is, I mean, we're looking at these numbers. GDP coming in for the second quarter revised to 4.2%. A lot of that attributed to the tax cuts, putting more money in people's pockets, retail sales up, and consumer confidence yesterday, the highest level in 17 years. I talked to Carol Cordier at the conference board that puts that out. And it's just across the board, not only current feelings about the economy, but expectations about the future. And I know you have a million naysaying things like wages haven't really done this and that.
Well, but Terry, wages really haven't gone up.
I knew you were going to say that. Well, you always say that.
Well,
the point I'm making is you can have an intellectual debate about this, but the economic numbers show that the economy is growing. People are feeling better. They're spending. I think if you want one cloud on the horizon, it's in home sales, particularly on the West Coast. Pending home sales dropped for the seventh month in a row. But because what's happening is that the cost of materials for new homes is rising, so it's pushing the prices up. Part of that's the tariffs. Hey, look, I can make you 12 arguments against this economy. Let's start with the tariffs are raising the prices of homes, making them less affordable. Hey, let's start out with why should I, as a Chicago taxpayer, be supporting the mistake of tariffs and having to do price supports for farmers?
Okay, so those are...
So there's a lot of things that aren't exactly right.
But overall,
right,
we're feeling really well.
The feeling is the feeling, and the feeling's positive.
And, you know, I try not to get very political on this show just because...
I know, and I try not to let you.
But if we are going to, I like to lure you into it.
I know you do.
this might be a case, though, with President Trump... more so than in past presidents where the economy, well, we'll see.
If you remember James Carville, it's the economy, stupid?
Right, but that was back then. I'm just saying that Donald Trump is much more of a lightning rod and people might be voting pro or con on him rather than the economy this year.
Well, the thing is, the important thing is that we've known forever that I'm not saying this is right. And there, you know, you won't lure me into this discussion. I'm just giving you the facts, ma'am, just the facts. And the facts are that when Americans are feeling prosperous, they tend to vote for the party in power then to stay in power because, you know, they're not worried about being foreclosed. They're not worried about overdrafts and so forth.
One of the things we're going to talk to Frank Sennett about are the 4 million plus properties that have been sold in the area so far. I think 47, which tied all of last year, mm-hmm. have been sold already this year. And speaking to that, people are feeling better about the economy.
Yeah, we don't see, you know, we see a better real estate economy here. I'm sure Frank will confirm that. On the West Coast, the prices have really moved out of reach of the average consumer. So that's why you see pending home sales numbers decline, particularly in the West and the Southeast.
The corporate earnings season has just ended, right, for the second quarter?
Yeah, and we had great corporate earnings.
Up 7%, I think, on average?
Well,
year over year?
Don't say that in such a negative way. We want corporations to make money because corporations, when they make money, they can do a couple of things. They can hire more workers.
They can buy back their stock.
They can buy back the stock, which means your mutual fund, your pension fund, your 401k, your target date fund has more money to reinvest. They could reward their employees with bonuses. Great. Those people get to spend.
One time.
I mean, they could dividend it out to the shareholders. But they could expand. They could say, you know, we're making money. Let's build that other plant. And then you got the construction workers and electricians and everybody else getting jobs. So that's kind of, I hate to tell you because you don't want to see that happen because of the way you feel politically. But the fact is that's happening across the land. Corporations are making money and hiring more people and maybe not paying them as much as you'd like them to, but it's a lot better than when they were laying people off by the thousands.
You know, you're making me laugh because you're the one trying to lure me into a fight today, I think.
Yeah, I know I am.
We were going to talk about it.
Okay, what do you want to talk about?
But corporate earnings up. I mean, everything really is good. The housing numbers you said are down a little bit, but
we
haven't seen a negative impact for the tariffs nationwide yet.
But look at, yes, that's not true. That is absolutely not true. You are seeing, first of all, the reason the market's up a little bit today is because it looks like Canada will come to the table.
All-time highs, right, for NASDAQ and S&P?
Yes, NASDAQ and S&P. The Canadians are now figuring they don't want to be left out of what looks like a deal with Mexico. I mean, I can give you a million negatives, even a bunch of them economic. There are companies that are having a difficult time hiring workers because they many times hired legal foreign workers and those visas are restricted. There are companies that are swallowing losses because the cost of the things they import, steel and other things are going up. I'm not saying that this one moment, which will likely last for another month or two, is all-time perfection in the future of the economy. I'm saying that the current perfection will likely impact the elections unless people look beyond and see farmers are being hurt, manufacturers are being hurt, home builders, the cost of lumber skyrocketed, et cetera, et cetera.
So explain for me then, because a lot of the polling I see shows that the people don't tend to think that the income tax cut benefited them individually, but
Tell that to the conference board, which measures consumer expectations
or retail sales or restaurant sales. Explain that conflict for me. So if they individually say it didn't help me so well, and then they're saying they feel more confident than ever, I don't understand that.
Well, you're obviously talking to two different groups of people, number one. Of course, not everybody feels the direct impact. The idea of an economy is not that you make a tax cut and all of a sudden everybody, I mean, there are some people that don't make enough for the impact of a tax cut in the taxes, the low taxes they pay to really change their lives. That's absolutely true. But if, in fact, the tax cut on those who do pay a lot encourages them to spend more, then you get factory orders going up. Then you get companies, you know, putting on overtime and so forth. So the private sector is doing pretty well. What's really sad, actually, frankly, and what worries me most now is the public sector. Nobody's talking about the federal deficit. That's another half hour discussion. But look in Illinois. Nobody's talking about our debt and our pension problems that are coming down the road far faster than anyone thinks. So I am not saying happy days are here again. I'm just saying for the moment, everybody's feeling okay. Yeah, for this moment.
Terry Savage. You can read more at terrysavage.com. She's got a column up today, in fact, about how to plot to pay for college. And we're going to talk about that coming up in just a couple of minutes. It's 12:22. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, right here on 720 WGN. Terry Savage is in the studio. At terrysavage.com, she has a column headlined Rethinking College Costs. And the whole idea is that when your son or daughter is born, as soon as they're able to comprehend thought, you should explain to them that there's no way they will afford college.
No, that's not it at all.
And just move on from there.
You know, I said all in the last segment about the things I'm worried about, things like our city pensions and our state debt and our federal debt. And one of the things I'm really worried about is student loan debt. And I have been for a long, long time, which now is $1.5 trillion more even than credit card debt outstanding. And it occurred to me, this is not one of those, here's three ways to pay for college columns. It's a thought column about something that I started thinking about with my own son many, many years ago. I think it's because my parents said this to me when I wanted to go to an East Coast school. I've never told you this. And they said, we can't afford it. You have two younger brothers.
Right.
And they drove me to Ann Arbor and I fell in love and I only applied to Michigan and I'm thrilled, of course, that I did. But I think parents have to be able to say to their kids at some point in high school, preferably early in high school, wait a minute, take a look at the costs. And getting student loans isn't the answer, because by the time you've repaid them, you've paid more than double the cost of your education.
Here's the thing, right? And that's an important point, that when you take the loans out, it's like buying a house. Once you've paid off the loans, you've actually paid twice as much.
Or more.
But here's the problem, and maybe we need to redo our focus when it comes to kids and school, because, you know, with my kids, I'm sure with yours, what we tell them is work hard so that you can get into the best college. Work hard from, you know, third grade on, you can get into the best college. You can, you know, that's what. And so when they're applying for those best colleges that come back charging 70, 80 grand a year, you know, that's when you're stuck. So we've preached to them to work really hard so you can go to the best possible school. We haven't preached to them
got a great education that will be useful in life.
Right.
And that's absolutely true. I'm a liberal arts major, but when I hear kids majoring in, you know, comic books and American literature, I mean, it just drives me crazy.
Value of comic books.
Yeah, obviously, because they're going up. It's a great market, but not a great career. Look, I think what I'm trying to say is that when your kids are getting into high school, their freshman and sophomore year, by then you want to have a discussion about what you can afford and what they can afford and why student loans are not the answer for the, it may bridge the gap now, but they're going to burden you on into your life. So there are a couple of things you can say. First of all, kids need to understand about your money. And, you know, I know you don't want to reveal grandparents. This is something you might want to have your adult parents of young children start talking about. I know there are a lot of you out there. Nobody wants to reveal their salary, but you can use a big round number and say, guess what? If mom and dad together make $100,000, $40,000, because we're in the something top tax bracket plus the state, is going right up. 40% of it, $40,000, is going right away in taxes. And then, what do you think the mortgage costs? What do you think our electric bill is? Your internet bill? What do you think food costs for this family every week? Is it $100 a week multiplied by 4 and you get a month? And give kids a sense that there's not just tons of money floating around and you're trying to save some. Okay? I think that's the first discussion. And the second one is, you know, we have 3 or 4 kids. Here's what we think we should do. The first 2 years you should live at home. Oh my God. Wait, you don't want them and they don't want you, but you will save the cost of room and board, and then you will be able to go to any 4-year college you can get into after those first 2 years at community college.
The people who do that are such outliers. The people who can afford maybe to go and still do that because it's prudent, I think, are such.
Afford to go, I'm not telling you to afford.
I mean, be able to take out the loans and pay for it.
That's the thing. So
that's what we're talking about.
Go to. I'll give you 2 websites. They're in the column at terrysavage.com, but collegeboard.org, and there's a direct link. It has the cost of future tuition. I mean, parents, you got to be thinking about this. And on simpletuition.com, there is a wonderful website, a wonderful calculator, and again, the link's right in that column, that shows you the cost of repaying student loans. It looks so easy. The money drops in your pocket first of every semester, but oh my gosh, you're going to be paying for maybe 20 years, and that's why we don't have, by the way, a generation of kids buying houses or getting married. They can't even start their lives with the burden of this debt.
I like in the column that you compare it to a birds and the bees talk, that this is sort of a birds and the bees talk you should have with kids about college and the cost of it.
Absolutely. And you know, when you're on having that talk, send them to scholarships.com. And there they can look and see when they're freshmen and sophomores, what kind of scholarships are available if they're part of the debate team or if they do community service work. All those kinds of things that may enable them to get some free money that never has to be repaid. But when Fidelity's new college cost survey, they do this every year, said half of parents feel it's their obligation to pay for the entire education.
I was shocked by that. But you wrote that only half
figure that they should be saving for it. Well, they're not saving anyway. But worse, one-third of parents, this is from the Fidelity 2018 College Savings Indicator Study, one-third of parents expect their children to have at least $10,000 saved in the form of part-time jobs or grandparents' gifts to, quote, contribute to paying for college. But all those families, a very small percentage of them, have had this birds and bees discussion. So the kid gets to be a junior or a senior applying for college, and they go, well, wait, I don't think we can afford that.
I was surprised by the number that 49% thought that they should pay for the whole thing. That seems like a high number to me, that 49% of parents think they should pick up the entire.
You know, when you and I were growing up, our parents, I know my parents, they never thought about taking loans. They thought about what could they afford to pay for.
And we took them. My parents, the God bless them, paid for mine. For that. I think I had maybe $10,000 in loans.
I paid for my son's. That was something I started saving for, you know, but of course I'm Terry Savage and this is what I do. But I mean, that it never occurred to me in a million years that I would burden my son with student loans.
So we need to change the way we think about choosing colleges and paying for them.
Yeah, and I think colleges are about, here's the other side. If there's a free market out there, and I think as parents step up and say, this is the education. Parents have to start saying out loud, I don't think we can afford that. Because you see so many people, seniors, who are having their retirements ruined and their Social Security garnished because they fall behind on their kids' student loan payments.
We were talking about this with John Williams yesterday, too. Or not even can't afford it. We're going to say, I'm not going to pay that.
Exactly.
I'm not going to pay for all of these extras.
I think that you will suddenly start to see, maybe not at the elite schools or the top schools, they have endowments and they give out scholarships and they balance their classes through all kinds of demographics. But I think you will find a middle level of schools that give you a very good education that are suddenly saying, look at the University of Illinois. It realized the free market that it's losing kids to out-of-state schools for a lot of reasons, and they're modifying and giving guarantees about tuition.
All right, read that column, terrysavage.com. Great to see you. We'll do it again next week.
Absolutely.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thanks very much, Kim. This is the Wintrust Business Lunch, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank, right here on 720 WGN. Frank Sennett is on a phone line now from Crane Chicago Business as we talk about some of the headlines in that publication, usually on Wednesday afternoons. Frank, welcome back to the Biz Lunch. All right, I'm sorry. Frank here. How about now? Can you hear me?
Yeah, how about is that good?
Yeah, we've had all sorts of technical difficulties, and I'd say about 85% of them are my fault, so I'm going to blame, but I'm not alone. welcome back. Okay, so I got to tell you, I was just talking to Terry Savage. She was on earlier, and she said, you got to talk to Frank about this LGBT list that Crane's put out. I think it was the top 80 in the business world in Chicago. And I didn't know, I think we didn't have a show last Wednesday or something, so I didn't really know much about it or haven't seen it. But tell me the reasons behind it and what the reaction has been.
Yeah, so it's in this week's issue. It's Chicago's notable LGBTQ executives. And it's driven by nomination, so it's not all-inclusive in terms of, you know, we may have missed a few people that didn't apply, but sure, it's a real big list, 88 really great executives or diverse array of industries. First time Crane's has ever done a list like this. We just thought it was important to call out, you know, how much part of the core fabric of the business community these LGBTQ executives are. It's and I was really happy to see when I saw the list come out. There's several folks that I've known as friends and acquaintances over the years. It's a really a great list.
And were there people who came out for the list, or everyone was pretty much out before the list?
Yeah, so this is, you know, something that we wanted to make very, very sure of. These were folks that were nominated, and so, you know, if they didn't nominate themselves, we made sure to check and make sure, are you out? Because it can be very tricky.
Sure.
You may be just be out at work. So everybody did confirm we're out and public about it. And so no ripples on that.
And what has been the reaction from your readers and from others to the list?
It's been really positive. I mean, I think, again, the folks that I know that are on Facebook, you know, just a huge acclaim, hundreds of likes, and there's the parties that are being thrown. And then the feedback from the general readership has been very positive. It's been our top story of the week on our ChicagoBusiness.com site with, you know, tens of thousands of views. So, I think we're onto something here. I hope that we will continue to do this every year.
And it's interesting that it took to 2018, but I'm glad you did it, and I'm glad that that's the first year, and maybe there'll be a second year next year.
Yeah, I think, judging by the response, I'm pretty sure there will be.
I'll tell you what, Frank, if it gets clicks and lots of likes, probably it's going to come back.
Yeah, that's the way this business works, right?
It does now. Okay, we talk a lot about Tempus and Eric Lefkofsky, and Tempus now is a $2 billion company, or explain that for me.
Yeah, so they just doubled their valuation with $110 million more in venture funding. They brought in some new investors. And so they are really able to pick up the pace on their, you know, cancer big data play, where they're trying to, you know, come up with ways to better customize cancer treatments and better target cancer care. It's you know, if this works out at scale, it's going to be a real game changer for a lot of people.
It would
in a very positive way.
It would be magical, and I know they're already looking at maybe expanding to Europe or Asia or things like that. But every time I read it, I have to stop and think about it, exactly what it is they're doing. What they're really doing is building a giant database, right? And then using that database to help future cancer patients?
That's right. And they work with academic medical centers. They have worked with 50 of the 69 major National Cancer Institute designated cancer centers. And so Eric is saying that 1 in 4 cancer patients in the U.S. touch Tempus in some way. But every time I think about this company, you know, I wrote the Groupon book, so I know Eric pretty well. Groupon will end up being a footnote in his life, which is crazy to think about, since that was a $1 billion company, if this really pans out. I mean, what an amazing thing.
And so the more data they get and to see how then those patients respond to treatment, they can help others, the next person with a diagnosis, because they've got all these numbers behind them. It's kind of surprising. I mean, maybe we didn't have the ability to do it before, but I'm glad it's happening now. I'm kind of surprised it didn't happen before.
Yeah, it's one of those things where you think, well, this is a great application of that big data model, and it really was a straggling aspect of that. I think, you know, money-making business applications came first, and now, you know, this not that they won't, you
make
know,
money,
generate
sure.
Revenues
yeah.
off of it, yeah, but that it is more of an altruistic aim, and you know, if it pans out, like you say, it's going to be a game changer, not only here, but they are looking to expand overseas now.
Tempus, follow Tempus. There are things happening there. Okay, we were dating then, used to have a house in Michigan, so we'd drive around the bottom of the lake and go up to Allegan County every weekend. And, you know, I loved memorizing the sort of the towns up. I love the coast of Michigan. I miss it. I'm sorry we're not there as much as we used to be. But there's the story that Ari Bednarski wrote about this beach. I don't know Cherry Beach, but it sounds like it's near Harbert and Sawyer, Lakeside, Union Pier, that area. There's some pristine beach that the neighbors are trying to buy, or what's this about?
Yeah, and that's the same experience I have, not owning a house out there, but going out there. I've been to Union Harbor Beach, you know, several times, so near, or Union Pier Beach several times, so near there, but I wasn't aware of this either. It's called Cherry Beach. It's a small public beach, but adjacent to that, people thought it was just a bigger part of this public beach, is a private stretch of beach and forested land, pristine dunes, 400 feet of lakefront. It's been held in a trust for more than 30 years, and so now a group of community folks and you know, donors are trying to raise $1 million to buy it and keep it as a public benefit. And there's some pretty big donors. You
in
know?
This township, there's not a lot of public beach; most of it is privately owned.
Exactly.
Right. Well, that's what the thing. So it's hard. Not that I'm not sympathetic, but if you're a gazillionaire and you've got a house over there and you're buying up more property to keep it pristine, good for you. That's not quite a heartfelt story. But if you're a parking attendant who works there, and according to this story, there are parking attendants in that town, too, who are contributing because everyone's working together to try to preserve this beach, I think that's just a great story.
It's wonderful. Yeah, the pledge amounts are as low as $25, and they have raised 85% of the $1 million that they need. They get the $1 million. There's some government money that kicks in to cover the rest of the purchase price. And it looks like they're going to do it.
Read more at chicagobusiness.com. That's Frank Sennett. Frank, thanks very much for joining us today.
Thanks, Steve.
It's the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Let's check the, where are we now? 1245. We'll come back with the traffic in just a minute. First, this.
This is the Wintrust Business Minute.
Here's the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing and examining Chicago business news of the day. Millennials these days get a bad rep for only caring about spending money on experiences and avocado toast.
Hey, it's a superfood!
But the travel industry is trying to cash in on that demand. So the Icelandic airline WOW Air is offering up one-way flights from 7 major U.S. cities for only $199.
What?
Chicago is lucky enough to be one of those cities, and with the continued travel boom growing side by side with the globalization of business, this could be the next spring break destination. destination or global headquarters for a corporation. Who knows? But if you don't have the money, you can't travel. So get to work and make the next prototype device or something. And if you need help, MHUB is here to help with that. With their welding class from ARC Academy on Thursday, August 30th, you may be telling yourself, that seems like an outdated skill to learn. But let me remind you that there are over 22 makerspaces in the Chicago area, and with the startup age we're in, prototypes are everywhere, and maybe that skill could be in demand. I'm Bennett Wakenight, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Thanks very much, Steve Alexander. Work on that HAFTA thing there. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, sponsored by Wintrust, Chicago's bank. Thanks very much for tuning in on this Wednesday afternoon. Neil Salas-Griffin is on the phone line, and Neil is making an impact in all sorts of ways. We're going to talk about what's going on at Northwestern, but first, he's the CEO of Code Now as well, and I want to talk a bit about that. Neil, welcome to the Wintrust Business Lunch.
Thanks for having me. It's a pleasure.
You know, let's talk about what's going on at the garage at Northwestern, but first, you're doing some nice things at Code Now, too, and I want people to know about that. So tell me a little bit about Code Now.
Most definitely. Code Now is a national nonprofit. We operate on the East Coast, the West Coast, and now here in Chicago. We teach high schoolers the basics of software development and entrepreneurship to help young people solve meaningful problems with coding and technology skills.
And so how are you finding the young students when they're coming up? Is there sort of a change in, I'm going to use the word aptitude. I don't know if it's right, the right word, but maybe an improvement in the aptitude now than there would have been like 5 or 10 years ago?
Yeah, it's incredible. I've been in this industry for almost a decade now, teaching software development to beginners. And I'll tell you, more and more now, when I deal with young people, folks in junior high and high schoolers, they are extremely competent and well-versed in user interface design and the basics of programming and technology.
Neil,
they know their way around computers and phones.
Do you ever try to teach old people? Because I think that might be harder.
Oh, you know what? I actually got my start teaching older folks.
Did
so
you?
When I launched my school, I didn't start with young people. I actually started with people of all ages, and a lot of the folks skewed slightly older who I was able to teach. So we've had folks in their 70s learn to program from scratch in my program.
And did you find that the older people were just as teachable, less teachable, more teachable?
There are slight differences, but actually when you have a diverse classroom, when you have people from different ages and backgrounds and experiences, it actually enhances the learning environment and the outcomes.
Yeah,
so
I
found it to be, you know, there are slight differences, but it was definitely better than a more homogenous group.
All right, let's talk Wildfire Demo Day. This is the culmination of the summer project at the Garage, Northwestern University, where these young student entrepreneurs, right, they come up with plans for different businesses. They make their pitches. It's coming up tomorrow. I know you can watch it on the stream at thegarage.nu/DDLive. I suspect
yep.
You're going to be there. Tell me about your impressions of these kids so far.
I will be there, and I'll tell you, there's no better way to spend the summer than to work with some of Northwestern's top technology entrepreneurs, and these companies are just so much fun to work with because they're doing meaningful work. We've got, you know, businesses working on mental wellness support for police officers and, you know, employees at companies. We've got people who are working on, you know, making it easier for parents to deal with their kids who may be on, you know, the autism spectrum. There's, like, people working on ways to have better political dialogue among young people in high school. It's just incredible to see how hard these young people are willing to work to make their businesses real and solve real problems find a way to make money.
I love these competitions because I love to read about the different companies. You mentioned some of them, and that's great, but there's also one, I think it's called Jora, which is working to put electrolytes in alcohol so that college kids don't have hangovers. Hey, I think that's a needed product, too.
Oh, definitely. And you know, the list goes on and on. And there's a lot of local innovations that are happening. And a lot of these, you know, students are looking at their own lives and their own problems and figuring out ways to solve them. And that's, you know, some of the best startups come from that.
What happens then after these incubator programs? You know, so they're there's a competition. There's $10,000 in purse money here that will be divvied up. Do these ideas go away? Do these kids stay with the ideas? Do they become businesses? Or what happens next with this?
Yeah, ideally what happens next is they move forward and grow their businesses. Sometimes we call the Wildfire program a pre-accelerator. So the idea is that some of these companies can buy to get into larger, more expansive, you know, business accelerators that could be in different locations or in Chicago, like Techstars Chicago, which has been around for a long time.
Sure.
So with all this, like, budding innovation in Chicago, we're setting up all of these teams through Wildfire to move forward either independently or through one of these other programs.
Yeah, it's exciting to watch. Are these students, by and large, business students, or do they come from a variety of schools there?
Oh, definitely a variety of schools. Right. So we do have a few students from the business school at Kellogg, but actually we have engineers, we have artists, we have students from lots of backgrounds.
Neil Salas-Griffin, the CEO of CodeNow and a mentor at the Graduate Northwestern University. Thanks very much for joining us. I know you're very busy. I hope you have a great day tomorrow, and I hope it's a great success for all of them.
Thank you. Hope to see you all out there tomorrow night.